VentureCast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the next edition of MTP. I am your host, Hollywood Rich, on the camera with my guy, the OBK, Bob Kelly. If this is your first time listening to us, we thank you for tuning in. Make sure you hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. That's still the best way to get us out there. We're trying to get out there in a major way. So, BK, how you doing tonight, man?
Good, man. Good. It's good. Good to be back talking some C's, man. I feel like we've been so wrapped up in football and like all this other stuff, man, that we haven't really hit our stride with the C's yet this season. But man, it's been going good, man, for them.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel like this time of year we get back into this, and then next thing you know, we get a bunch of new eyeballs that hadn't seen us before. Even though the football content's really good, but for some reason, you know, the basketball is what brings people in for whatever reason outside the UFC stuff that we've done as well. So. Yeah, hey, listen, stay tuned, because we, like I said, this next month or so, we're going to ramp it up. We're going to give you some Celtics stuff. We're going to give you some Bruins stuff. And even though they haven't done much, we're going to talk Red Sox eventually too. But like I said, tonight is good vibes, because your Boston Celtics currently stand at 45-12. Not only are they first in the East, but they're first in the NBA overall. They are currently on a 8-game win streak. As we record this on a Monday night, they face, by the time this comes out, they'll be facing in Philadelphia, and then they have Dallas and Golden State on this week, but we'll talk about that as the show progresses. But man, eight games in a row. You know, I was worried about maybe them coming out kind of slow after the All-Star break. That hasn't happened, but just speak to, you know, what you've seen so far from them, as we are we're about 3/4 through the season. Just, you know, who has been the biggest X factor, if I can get that out of my, if I could talk, okay. Who has been the biggest X factors for you so far?
I mean, there's only one answer, right? There's only one answer to this question, man. That's Porzingis. What he has brought to this team, man. I know there's a lot of like unsung, and there's a lot of guys who have become X factors this year. But in my opinion, the reason for all of that, man, is Porzingis in the middle of that offensive rotation. He changes everything for this team. He makes them so versatile, and has just opened up so much ball movement for this team. His efficiency rates are just astronomically better than we thought they were going to be. You know, like, that was our biggest positive coming in when we found out we were getting Porzingis, was like, bro, the efficiency is going to take off for this team because of what he's going to bring to it. I didn't think it would be like this, man. Did you?
So I got to give Mike credit, because Mike's the one who initially brought this up on our show. I think all of us were like, no way. Like, what are you thinking? And I think it's because we had dealt with so many injury ridden big men, or just even players in general, that we were just like, no, like we don't want to see that. We don't need any more of that. Let's just stick with what we have and then just see if guys continue to grow, continue to develop. So kudos to the front office, kind of. So Brad Stevens, Mike Zarin, Austin Ainge, Steve Pagliuca and the crew, you know, shout out to them for thinking, hey, we have a chance to go get this guy. We may have to part with a player that, you know, we don't really want to part with, but at the same time, if it's going to make us exponentially better, not linear growth, but exponential growth, you know, you do it. You take the chance. And yeah, he's been every bit of what they've asked for and more. But answer your question, no, I didn't expect it. For me, it's the guy that I've been clamoring for since he got here. And it's Derek White. Like, Derek White.
Yep.
Like I said, I will continue to take a victory lap until, you know, he's not on the team anymore. And that dude has been lethal. He has been lethal. And he kind of hit of a lull kind of towards the beginning of this month. But going into the All-Star break, he started to catch fire again. He was great the other night in New York. He was great in that game in Chicago as well. His confidence was shooting a three-point shot. His defense has been incredible. That block that he had on Vucevic the other night, I said, oh, my God. I was like, a dude being 6'4", 6'5", and blocking a guy that's 6'10", like, that was crazy. So, he's always going to be that. I love what Jrue Holiday's been able to do as well. Like, obviously, he's been a big X factor than Derek White, but defensively, he's answered the bell time and time again. He continues to blow up plays on defensive end. So, yeah, that backcourt as a whole has been X factor, but like I said, I'm always going to pick Derek White. But like I said, anyone that says Porzingis or agrees about the Porzingis thing is not wrong. He has been the curveball that Brad Stevens talked about. He's been the curveball that Joe Mazzulla's talked about. So I'm glad that he's here. Once again, do I miss Time Lord and Smart? At times, sure. But I mean, I enjoyed them on the team. You know, there was times when they drove me crazy, especially Marcus. But I mean, we can't argue with the results right now. And once again, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. You know,
well, and you know what else? You know what else doesn't lie is the injury report. And I don't know if you've seen the Grizzlies injury report and the Trailblazers injury report all year, but there's been two names that have constantly been on those lists: Marcus Smart and Robert Williams. Yeah. So you know, we people can sit here and clamor away about it, bro. It was A+ moves on both parts, Jrue and Porzingis. Man, what they have brought to this team have been, it's a stabilization of the offense is really what it is. You know what I mean? Like there's a few times the past 8 game winning streak where there were moments. It was everything that we were looking for and asking for these past 3 years. You know what I mean? Where it's like the ball movement, man, is so crisp and the amount of times that they make that extra pass to get that open shot versus just driving the lane or doing whatever, man, is like a dream come true compared to past years. Like, I hope it keeps up, but I don't see any reason why it won't. You know what I mean? I based off of the efficiency stats and like all these different things, man, it's just this team seems like they got it so far.
Yeah, I mean that's the eyeball. And once again, listen, last year's team was awesome in many. Brogdon was awesome. Rob went healthy was awesome. But like I said, it matters when you're not playing 4-on-5 at times. It matters. Sometimes it was even 3-on-5 because teams would sag off of Rob. They would sag off Marcus. And then once again, Brogdon is as good as he was at times. Once that shoulder, you know, was compromised, you know, he wasn't the same guy. So, you know, that matters. So, I don't know. I was just like the eye test alone. And you kind of saw within the first 10 games too. I felt like, you know, sometimes I think we were being cautiously optimistic about how it would unfold. But like, look at the first game of the season against New York. Porzingis comes in there and scores 30 the first night. Hits that big three to put him up, you know, 3 with like a minute left. And you're like, wow. Like, he's never been this wide open. Tatum has never been, you know, this wide open. So, JB has never been this wide open. So, it's just like the spacing is there. More importantly, the trust is there. And as JB said the other night, this is the most disciplined team I've ever been on. That says a lot. And once again, it's not. And once again, it could be a shot to Marcus. It could be a shot to Rob. It could be a shot to the Kyrie-led teams. But it is what it is. But I have to do a quick aside because I saw a post and I forgot who posted it. So forgive me for someone who posted it on Twitter. it was talked about the Celtics being favorites the last several years. And, you know, I won't say what I said word for word because I don't want to get canceled. But it was told like that. You can imagine what I said, but I was like, it was like, oh, wait, they were second and the second favorite or the third favorite or fifth. And I want to reiterate, and once again, we're a green teamer, so of course we're going to hype up certain players that we should hype up. But now that we're removed from it, I want to be clear, right? We were relying on the corpse of Kemba Walker, the likes of Romeo Langford, a younger Grant Williams, right, at the time. Tremont Waters, right? We talked about this before on the show. Like, these are guys that were considered to be key rotation pieces on a team that was supposed to contend. How can y'all say Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have been spoiled? When I'm like, once again, the best team they've had until maybe this year was the 2018-2019 team, and Gordon Hayward didn't want to come off the bench. He said, I still can go. Now, once again, I think he's proven that he can still play a little bit. I don't know what he's doing down in OKC at the moment, but when you can still get 16 a night, you know, off the injury he had, that's not bad. But he still was trying to prove himself on that max deal when he got here. But I just want people to pump the brakes. Like, I want you to look at the rosters before building this narrative about what Boston had. Because once again, there's only really 2 years where they should have blew you out the water. That was 2018, 2019, and then obviously we should have won the finals a few years ago, but once again, mentally, or as we say, as you know, the championship DNA, which just wasn't there, unfortunately. So, but like I said, we're looking for better days ahead. Come April, May, and June. So, I want to go back a few.
Hopefully June.
Yeah, hopefully June, right? Plus, there's more money in my pocket too.
Hey,
right. But so I want to go back a few weeks ago because, like I said, we haven't done a selfish show in a while, so I want to touch on what happened at the deadline. So they make two small moves, bringing over Xavier Tillman from Memphis, bringing over Janet Springer from Philadelphia. So, you know, Springer's only 21 years old, Tillman's only 25, so they fit the timeline of this team. So do you think, did they make an impact right away, or was this really a move for next season and beyond, in your opinion?
I think it's
next season beyond, and I think it's more depth than anything. It seems like, you know, they're not expecting either of these two guys to make any kind of serious impact on this team, and I think if they do, things went really wrong. That's where I'm at with those two. You know, I think that they definitely can make an impact, you know, if they get the playing time, but I just don't see a path for either of them to significant playing time and like crunch time minutes or in the playoffs. I just don't see it happen. Like you said, man, this isn't the days where Tremont Waters and guys like that are playing significant minutes on this team. You know, like, I mean, even guys like, you know, Hauser's struggling to find minutes at times, you know, Cornet's struggling to find minutes at times. Mm-hmm. So for anyone, or like Brissett, I trust Brissett more than those two guys as well, but even he's struggling to find minutes at times. So it's like when you get guys that are that talented, and they're struggling to find minutes, it's really tough to see guys that were on less talented teams a couple weeks ago struggling to find minutes. It's tough to see that. But like I said, if they're forced into that opportunity, I think that they can, you know, stay afloat for a few games. I think especially Springer, I really like his game. But other than that, you know, I don't see much from those two, man. And I, like I said, if we do, I think something went wrong. Personally.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, obviously, so that means someone got hurt and they have extended time.
Right.
For those that, you know, and this has been on every Celtics show just about, so we're not giving you anything new unless you miss those shows and you turn into war. So thank you. Tillman was great last year in the playoffs against the Lakers in the first round. You know, looking no further than his game two performance last year when he had 23-12. So he's capable of having those type of moments. He reminds me of a Paul Millsap type guy. Millsap obviously was a better shooter. Rebound, obviously, you know, Millsap was all-star in his league for several years. But Tillman gives me those vibes. I feel like I was very encouraged by the video I saw from him earlier today at the practice facility, knocking down several threes in a row. I think that's how he's going to be able to get on the floor eventually. So, yeah, it definitely was a depth piece. It definitely was added insurance for sure. we essentially gave him nothing to acquire both players. So I love what I've seen from Brad in that regard, with not really dismantling the team in order to, you know, add on to them. And you get cheap labor in that regard from those two contracts. So, yeah, I think just from, like, say, for instance, say we face Milwaukee in the second round or conference finals, right? I feel like Springer would be good in that series because it gives another guy that can defend. You're going to need that against Dame, and you're going to need the six fouls, quite honestly. So I'm here for him getting some more time. Your boy Pritchett has delivered this year, so, you know, we give credit where it's due. Hauser, I wanted off the team, so, you know, Ricky, that's for you, bro. I'm admitting it on air. He has proven me wrong, but I was very, very nervous at the beginning of the year. You know, could he be an intricate part? So now, you know, Pritchard and Hauser are the seventh and eighth man right now. Cornette's probably the ninth guy. He stepped it up, as you mentioned. So he's also saying, hey, I'm not letting Tillman come in here and get my minutes. Once again, Cornette comes off very goofy, but, you know, as a player, you're competitive. And you're competitive. You want to make sure that you're giving the team your best when it's required. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see. I liked both of those moves. I just think, just to limit the minutes as the regular season dwindles down, I want to see Springer and Tillman on the floor. I just do, because I feel like even if it's like 10 to 12 minutes, like if we can get Tatum and Brown really just the starting five to between 29 to 32 minutes for the rest of the year, that would be ideal. Like, but the thing is, Tatum want to play 38. Jaylen Brown want to play 35. Like, Holiday wants to play 34. Like, but it's just like, bro, like, this is not about right now. This is about April. This is about May. And like I said, hopefully, you know, we'll see. But like I said, I overall like the additions. I hope they're able to make an impact. But at the same time, if this is about next year and some guys are not there at the back of the bench, you know, guys like Svi Mihailuk and then O'Shea Brissett, like those guys aren't there, then maybe those guys step in and fulfill those roles. So, you know, I'm excited to see, you know, what they do for us in the future. But I want to transition into the coach. Joe Mazzulla has gotten a lot of flack on the show, sometimes rightfully so. But for him to be one of the quickest guys to win 100 games, for them to be 45-12 this year, he looks more comfortable. So I want you to expand on the job that you think he's done. And, you know, has he earned your respect currently? Or, you know, are you still waiting to reserve judgment until playoff time, you know, to give your full synopsis or full analysis of him, I should say?
So as a Cowboys fan, I have to, you know what I mean? I'm programmed not to trust regular season success anymore. It's just the way my body and brain work now. But at the same time, man, I got to say his evolution of his offense from last year to this year is so encouraging, man. With, you know, last year, all we talked about was how stagnant things looked, and it looked like he didn't do plays, and it looked like he didn't do these basketball mind things that we wanted him to. Like, he was just kind of letting it roll and letting everything just kind of go. This year, Mazzulla ball is real, man. That offense is real. You know, there's a set play every single time down. There's cutters on every single play, which to me is exactly what this team needs. You have a pick and roll at the top with two guys that can pop, and you have a slasher coming off the edge, which is, you know, deadly on this team, because they literally have five guys at all times that can put the bucket in the hoop or put the ball in the hoop. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, all these elements that he's brought, man, have taken this team, to me, to a next level. And if he trusted in the playoffs, I don't know yet. You know, like, we don't know, because this is definitely the first full season we've seen in Mazzulla running the system, running what he sees as the best way for this team to win. We'll see if it works in the playoffs against, like, the best coaches in the league and stuff. But for now, man, he's definitely had more of my respect and more
confidence than he did at the beginning of the season. I'm not giving him like,
yeah,
my full go yet. I don't think I'm there. You know, like I said, I need to see it in the playoffs for sure. But he's getting there. He's getting there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think that's totally valid. I think that, you know, we, like I just said a few moments ago, we were so far on the other side of the spectrum, especially Dave. Like, Dave was like, man, fuck this guy. He's got to go. He's awful, da da da. So, you know, but the more they win, obviously, the bring Ime back chants have, you know, kind of quiet right now. I think they're still on the surface because fans are just waiting for something to fall. So they're like, see, man, we would have won. We don't know that. Once again, he's 25 and 32 right now with Houston, and they look a lot like how we did right before we went on that run last year, if you ask me. So they still need some help down there in Texas, but that's another show for another day. But yeah, I think it speaks to what's been around him too, right? When you add on Charles Lee, when you add on Sam Cassell, you know, I know Ben Sullivan and some other guys have left, but, you know, they put a brain trust around him that he hired that's helped them be successful. And, you know, you're only as good as the parts around you. So whether that's coaching-wise, whether that's, you know, player-wise, you know, personnel, obviously. So I think that he's done a phenomenal job. But once again, I'm still reserving my judgment too fully for the postseason because I want to make sure that, like, you know, in the words of Big Daddy Kane, we get the job done. Like that's where I want that to be. And I want to see them hosting the LeBron Trophy. Once again, I told the story when we did that show, and it's funny. Our pain was our most watched show. Our pain on here was our most watched show on here. So hopefully the next time we do a show in June, it's us sharing joy. And all y'all that watched our pain better watch our joy too. Well, I want Golden State to catch fire and get back there. Once again, Draymond got in my face and said, I got four, motherfucker. That has stuck with me since June 16th, 2022. But now I need it in my, I need Golden State to catch fire. We're going to talk about Sunday in a few moments, but man, I need Golden State back here in the finals. Like I need that. Like I need that. Like we need water like badly. So I'm hoping that they find a way to figure it out. Cause I know they've been struggling, but once again, our coach has been good. Our players have been good. And once again, life is good. Life is good right now if you are a fan of South the Nation and not overreacting to every loss or win, just enjoying the process, right? Not trusting the process.
But it, man. But we're enjoying it.
Enjoying the process because, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I'm going to go full BK mode here. This is feeling like, oh, wait. Sorry. I didn't say that last year. I didn't say it the year before. But this is feeling like, oh, wait, like once again, they came into places most nights and you knew the other team had no shot. And I know that sounds wild. And, you know, Craig, if you clip this later on, I'm like, if I get killed for it, so be it. But it feels like, oh, wait, it does. And once again, we couldn't predict that they were going to win 08 either. But when you saw them beat certain teams the way they did, it was like, oh, okay, we have something special here. So, and they've had a few of those signature wins this season. So, I just think, like I said, we're inching ever so closely, you know, to that banner 18 goal. So, any final words on that before we move on?
No, I feel like my final words will be touched on later on in the show. I don't want to jump anything. So, yeah, we'll catch it.
Well, let's get into some players, man. Obviously, you know, we talked briefly about Porzingis, talked about Derek White. But I want to talk about the guy who is now considered to be an MVP candidate that might be the leader of the MVP race. And that's none other than Jason Tatum, right? Dude is getting 27-8-5 on the year. He's on the team with the best record. Once again, not just in the East, but in the NBA. But before we get into, you know, do you want him to get the MVP? But I feel like his interviews lately, whether it's been about basketball, not basketball, he just seems to be at a different level mentally right now than he's ever been in his career. So just speak to the maturity you've seen for him this season. And are you worried about him getting the MVP at season's end?
So I just want to take, I mean, I'm not going to take the full victory lap quite yet. because, you know, he hasn't an MVP or hasn't gotten the championship yet or gotten anything like that. But I don't know if you remember when we first started this podcast, Rayshon, everyone was calling for Tatum's head. Everyone's like, oh, I'd rather do Brown, Tatum, you know. What did I think it was me and you personally who really were on the like, bro, this dude is 22 years old. Do you know how much maturity you gain from the ages 22 to 25 to 27? It is astronomical, man. The more, even a dude, I was watching an interview earlier today with Kyrie Irving. Even Kyrie Irving has matured to an adult and actually says adult things when he's interviewed now and actually has some kind of humility and like has these qualities that you kind of evolve into as you get older, man.
Right.
This is what Tatum is going through now. And honestly, to me, it feels like this dude is years ahead of where he should be mentally, in my opinion. The way he handled the Jaylen Brown All-Star Game thing where he had Brown take his minutes so he could get more points. Like you said, the interviews about the MVP, like he's not worried about MVP at all, man. He just wants to win a ship. Nice. And to see that mentality from a dude who, how old is he now, actually? 25, right? Yeah, 25?
He'll be 26 on Sunday.
Okay. To see that from a dude that age is different, man, because usually this age, you know, you look at dudes like a Devin Booker or like, I'm trying to think of other dudes, I don't know, even like a Ja Morant or like dudes like that that are clearly not the maturity level and leadership level that Jason Tatum is at. And this might derail a little bit, but like, I have never seen a player get held to such a high standard like this dude is, man. I don't know what it is, but like, if this was James Harden when he was 24, or James Harden, or even like a LeBron when he was 24, or Dwayne Wade when he was 24, and he was dropping 30 points a night with the maturity and leadership that Jason Tatum is showing. Is there another player that you could think of that would be held to this kind of standard that wouldn't be getting this credit like he isn't?
So in this current era, no. Like, there's been other players that have, obviously. Like, obviously, LeBron was on the pedestal from day one, and he's answered the bell time and time again, right? Whether people think so or not.
For sure.
But I think, yeah, in this current era, which is why when these conversations are being had about who is going to be the face, Luka doesn't get the slander. SGA doesn't get the slander. You know, I'm trying to think who else is in that. And like I said, John Morant. Well, he gets slandered, but he gets slandered for what he did off the court. You know, it's, you know, Zion to me.
Those are the Giannis.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Giannis, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, he is someone that, but he's also about to be 30. So I feel like, even though, you know, that's not old, but I feel like, you know, Tatum and all the
he's
guys.
He's got the ship, though.
He's got the ship.
So I think that's where, like, yeah.
Same thing with Jokic. Like, Jokic is about to be 29 later this year. So, you know, but it's like, you know, quietly, you know, I don't see those guys being the face all the time. Once again, hell of a player, but I don't see those guys, you know, becoming the face of the league, even though the guy that's labeled for MVPs and championships to back those claims up. But yeah, no, the slander is real. And I don't know whether it's because they felt like people anointed him too early in the 22 run, but I'm like we saw some of the best rookie performances in the playoffs from him at age 19. He just turned 20. So he was 20 years old, took LeBron in game 7. They beat Philly in 5. That Milwaukee series went 7, but I'm like, I remember him and Jaylen Brown both at 30 in that game 4 on the road. So he showed from day one that when he was given a chance, he was going to be special. So I don't know. What I will say is a quick aside, what I think happens, and it wasn't every player, but you brought up Dwayne Wade. So Wade, Bird, Magic, Kobe, who was his idol. a lot of those guys won early, right? And so now what happens is when certain guys don't win by year three, year four, you automatically get cast aside as some failure, as some guy that is a choke artist. And I'm like, wait a minute. Those that consider Michael Jordan to be the GOAT. Michael Jordan didn't win until he was 28. LeBron didn't win until he was 28. You know, once again, everyone's not going to be Magic. Not going to come in and get 42-15-7 in a closeout game. It's not happening. It's not. Bird, you know, wins the next year. You're not going to win in your second year most times, and then 2 and 3, and then go to 4 straight finals. That's not how this works. So we were spoiled by some people's greatness. We were. And I think that's part of it. And who knows? Maybe because they see it in him. Maybe they think he's supposed to be better than he was. But once again, the man had averaged 30 last year and was a sprained ankle away from going to back-to-back finals. Once again, not an opinion. To me, that's a fact. You know, we had the momentum at that moment. unfortunately, he gets hurt. And, you know, once again, Miami prevailed. Should have been down 3-0 in the first place. But, you know, they had all the momentum at that moment. So that's kind of what I see on that. But I said all to say, because I've been long-winded on tonight's show, I don't care about the regular season MVP. Talk to me in June when he's holding up with Paul Pierce held up, with Cedric Maxwell held up. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to see. Be the finals MVP. Do that. I'm good. If you're the finals MVP, you are the best player in the world. Because the best player don't always win MVP. So
I think with Dre, I kinda, you know, normally I don't like what Draymond said. You're not being long winded, don't worry. And you know, I like what Draymond said about it. It was like, it's almost exactly what we were just saying, man. It's like, there's no one that gets the disrespect that Tatum does just because he hasn't won a ring in this era. It's crazy, man, how much of a standard he's held to. I saw a thing earlier today that was like, Jimmy Butler, 2023 NBA Finals averages versus Jason Tatum's 2022 NBA Finals averages, and it was almost identical. And the quotes underneath each of them was, under Jimmy Butler, it was Jimmy Butler can't get no help, may put the back on his team. And yep. You go over to Jason Tatum, it's not even a top 20 player, fraud, can't handle the clutch. And yep. It's like, bro, it's the same exact stats, just with two different storylines attached to them. And that's just what the public takes off on. And yep. it's not fair to Tatum to beat, stealing the sign from DK, to beat him over the head with his own success.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's not fair to him, in my opinion. And it sucks to see that happen. But yeah. I think he's at least going to be top three this year, MVP. He has to, right? He's got to finish.
For sure. But I think about someone who was in the same draft as him, Donovan Mitchell, right? Donovan Mitchell from day one, because he was a lottery pick as well. You know, I think he went 13th overall to the Jazz in 2017. This dude has been money from day one. He's been awesome. But doesn't it feel like Cleveland is the Utah Jazz of the East? Great defenders. Good point guard that could score. You know, obviously you had Mitchell on both teams, but, you know, he had Gobert, had Ingles. Once again, he got Utah out the Hayward era because they didn't know who was going to play as Hayward, but he replaced Hayward, was better than Hayward while he was there in Utah. But it's just like they've been second round exits his whole career, regardless of where he's been. And once again, New York beat them last year in the first round. So he doesn't get the slander that others get, you know, mainly Tatum, you know, guys like Luka. You know, I mean, you know, and what, because he's 6-1, so he gets a pass? No, he's someone that gets you to 30 a night. And he hasn't done enough to get his team at least to a conference final. So
I think Luka to me is the best comparison when it comes to the standards that they're held to. You right? Because I feel like all these other guys that we're mentioning, right, in my opinion, can't hold a flame to Jason Tatum's shoes. You know what I mean? Like, listen, Donovan Mitchell's amazing. He really is. I love Donovan Mitchell. Not in the same stratosphere as Jason Tatum. Do you think so? Like,
yeah,
actually?
I agree.
Right?
He's a volume.
I feel like he's in the, he's that next tiered. Tatum, to me, has to
you can't. I think it is absolute blasphemy that people mention who's the next face of the league and Luka Doncic comes out of people's mouths and the next name isn't Jason Tatum. That's where I think he has to be in this echelon of people at this point, because like, dude, he's had more success from day one than Luka's ever had. And it's like, Luka just has this like aura of like, he's the best. He's Luka. He's bro. That's in my opinion that Jason Tatum has had a much better career so far than Luka Doncic. I don't even think it's that close, yeah. Man.
Luka is James Harden in Houston.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's what he is. And once again, that's okay.
He's obviously a little better than like what, like he's got, I think he's got a little more of a skill set, I think.
Harder to get
there. That's true. That's a different level. You're right.
Man was hooping, but it's just like, Luka's getting 35 a night now, right? And it's just like, dude, like, that's great that you're going 87 MJ, but there's nothing to show for it. Because that's what that was happening too. MJ was going 37 a night.
What are they? The seventh seed? They're the seventh seed right now, Dallas? Something like that? Sixth seed? Maybe?
Yeah. And they just won 7 in a row themselves just to get to that. You know, that's how stacked the East is. Remember, we grew up in the era where the sixth seed had 50 wins.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that might be the case now. We might be getting back to them days where, you know, the eighth seed might have 48 wins. You know, which is, I'm like, that's a great state to be in because you shouldn't be 33 and 49 getting into the playoffs. You just shouldn't be.
It's a fact.
You know, I never want to see that again, unless it's us. unless we were that bad some year where we had to go that bad just to get in and be an AFC. But, you know, that would just be whack for the ratings overall. But, yeah, so I don't know. But like I said, I'm sick of the slander myself. Once again, have I had my frustration with Tatum? Absolutely. Because, you know, there's the settling. He settles too much at times. But it's like, I feel like now they're preaching attack the mismatch. Attack
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And there's not a defender in this league. And I say this confidently. There's not a defender in this league that could slow him down. That could stop him all the time. You can slow him down a little bit. But, you know, it's like, I even remember that Clippers game a few months ago. He's killing the Clippers. And you see PJ Tucker, like, you know, throwing his hands, like, oh my God. And I'm like, look, PJ, you know, you had a nice run. You ain't do nothing with this version of Tatum, brother. Maybe a couple of years ago when he was still trying to figure it out. Not now. He's giving people whatever he wants. And, you know, it's just like the man is just special. I know people were mad about the 19 points the other night because, you know, it fucks up the parlay. Fuck that. That was one of his better games of the season. He saw that JB was cooking.
He messed up my parlay, but hey, I agree, it was one of his better games.
Yeah, but I'm like now the mess up the parlays made people give unnecessary slander. It's like, no, Smith's not a scrub. Like, just because you didn't get the 25 to get the $65, sorry. Like, I'm worried about the name on the front. I need them to win a championship badly. Like, we've been knocking at the door. It's time to kick that motherfucker down. That's where I'm at. I don't care about no bets. Once again, I like my fair share of betting too. I don't care about that. I want the name on the front to say in June, I want to hear Eddie Palladino's voice saying, and that's the ball game. You're 2024 NBA champions, the Boston Celtics. Like, that's what I want to hear. That's my parlay. That's what I want to, that's my plus 1500. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I need more than anything. So I said to say, let's chill with the Tatum slander, because the same ones that's killing him now are going to be sucking him off, you know, pause, come June. If they win.
All right, pause.
He's such a great player. I knew he could do it. And I'm attacking everybody that changes their stance. So my boy Jalen, I'm talking to you. Justin, I'm talking to you. You know, my whole TD group chat that be going off. Leak, what up? I'm coming to all of y'all because y'all kill Tatum on a regular basis. So if they win on in June, y'all better not be excited for shit. Don't even show up to work that day. Don't even come to the parade. And I feel like you in 2011. Remember me and you had that back and forth? It was Vancouver, game 7, and they had not done anything on the road. And I'm like, I was missing negative. I'm like, I don't know, Bobby. Like, they just haven't. He was like, and that's like the only time he really cussed at me negative. He was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I am not accepting this negative bullshit, right, Sean? Get off my page. And I was like, man. I was like, but Bobby hits at me like that. I was like, oh, this is serious. I said, you know what? You're going to win this fucking game. And thankfully, you know, them boys came through. You know, speaking to them, I'm hoping today to get a long run too compared to what happened last year, because they messed up my money. Not my parlay, but they messed up my money because they didn't go as far as they should have in last year's playoffs. So, you know, let's just avoid Florida, even though Florida's right behind us in the standings. Let's avoid them at all costs if we can.
Not to go on a bees tangent, but they're looking a little bit more like the bees of the past lately, aren't they? They really are, man.
Yeah. Quick aside, yeah, they've been struggling. Listen, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, we're gonna get into them as well. You know, we gave y'all a playoff preview.
Those late leads are killing us.
I know, nailing. What, I think it's up to 9 now. 9 of them they've blown. So it's like it's pathetic. But you know, once again, back to positivity. So. I've said this before on this show, and I'll say it again. Once again, I didn't say it originally. I give credit to Isaiah Thomas that played for Detroit and the late, great head coach Chuck Daly. They had went to 3 straight finals in the late 80s, so 88, 89, 90. You know, if Isaiah Thomas doesn't get hurt, they're probably the only team in that era to go for a three-peat, but that didn't happen because Isaiah Thomas got hurt. But he mentioned, I guess, when they won in 90, Chuck Daly looked around and said to every guy on the team, so Benny Johnson, Joe Dumars, James Edwards, John Sally, Dennis Rodman, so on and so forth. And he said to them, or he asked them, if we need one game on the road, do y'all feel that we can win it? And, you know, Isaiah Thomas tells a story, says to a man, we all said, yes, coach, we feel like if we need one game on the road, you know, we trust each other to get the job done. So he said, okay, cool. Seeding is not the most important thing. Health is. So I set that up by saying, after what we've seen at TD Garden in both sports last year, do you care about seeding? And, you know, my follow-up question to that is, if we wrap up the one seed by late March, do you want to sit Porzingis until the playoffs?
No. I don't. I think it's a horrible idea. His body type, to me, is not the one that you can just sit and expect to come back and not have some kind of flare up of something. You know what I mean? Like, just his history and his past, man. Like, I think that the way that they're using him right now is perfect. You know, with his efficiency rates, what they are, the way that they use him in the offense, where he's not really the banger down low. You know what I mean? He's not getting beat up on a nightly basis. He's up top running screens, running picks, shooting his step back three is so fucking awesome, man. It's so cool to see a 7'3" guy do a step back three.
Insane.
But yeah, no, I think you can scale him back. I don't think you can sit him though. You may maybe, you know, rest nights here and there, but I wouldn't sit him. I don't trust that. I think you need this team firing from day one in the play. Man, I personally wouldn't. I think you know, like I said, you pull all the minutes back, you kind of get into the depth a little bit more. Maybe, you know, Tillman and those guys start doing something down the stretch once, you know, we do lock up that one seed, knock on wood. But yeah, no, I wouldn't sit up. You can't do that.
I think, well, in my opinion. Yeah, no, So as I wrote this earlier, and I was, you know, we were met about this, I went back and forth on this question, and I thought that I had an answer, and I'm still kind of up in the air, honestly. It looks like he's going to get around the 60-game mark. That's what it looks like he's about to reach this season, because he's at 42 right now. which is already more than where Rob Williams played last year and the year before. So, you know, that's already a plus in that regard. The man's getting 20 a night still on a limited shot. So that, you know, it just speaks to his efficiency. But to answer the first question that I asked, say if they did have this mini collapse and they fell to the 2 seed, like, I'm not worried. Like, so this team has also won 8 in a row on the road. As I just think they go into arenas saying, it doesn't matter who's in front of us, we are the team to beat, period. And I think that's a phenomenal mentality to have. Once again, there's some teams that may have some more resistance towards that than others, but I just think coming into each scenario, they're like, look, you know, we're 26-3 at home, you know, really should be 27-2, but it's a whole other story because the LA loss was terrible. my God. But I just think, like I said, when you're winning like that and you're that together, because once again, the ball movement was great. Once again, that game in New York, yes, they were missing Randall and Ananobi and Mitchell Robinson. The way they stuck together, even when that game got tight early on, and then just like that in the third quarter, it was like the Thanos snap. It was like, oh, it's over. And I forget, and I should have mentioned this earlier, but it just dawned on me. I'm almost hoping that the second quarter becomes their quarter of doom now and not the third, because if you're keeping it close and it's like next thing you know, you start blowing out teams in the third quarter, cool. I'm with that, because I was getting nervous with this third quarter trend of them not doing what they're supposed to do. And then teams saying, well, as long as we keep it close, you know, we could take that lead on them. It's like, no, I want them to go in how they did against Chicago, how they did against New York, since coming from the break, and say, okay, we're going to move the ball. We're going to take our defense up to another level. And then the game is going to be over, especially in the third quarter, because teams are now getting little runs. But I'm no longer sitting there saying, damn, this team's going to come all the way back against us. A lead maybe get down to 7 or 8, and I'm just like, Jrue Holiday's about to hit a corner three, and then he does. Then it's like, Derrick White's going to get an and-one, then a steal, then he does. Taylor's going to do the 1-2 dribble, sidestep three, time out the other team. Now the lead's back up to 15. You're like, oh, my God. They're back in control. Yeah. That's what's been happening just about all year. So you are the habits you build, and they're building that habit. They still have moments of, you know, lax basketball, but those stretches are becoming more few and far between. So I'm grateful that we're not seeing those stretches as much and that they're starting to tighten up, playing well in the third quarter. Once again, they still have some stuff they need to work on as the regular season comes to a close, but hopefully the third quarter woes are something that are of the past, but it doesn't rear its ugly head too much in the near future. So, you know, that's
just I just think that the setup of this team really helps eliminate that. Like, I hate to keep going back to it, man. Like, Porzingis adds that element that takes that stagnation away. You know what I mean? Because, you know, even when he isn't on the floor, you still feel that they keep things moving way more than they ever did. Like you said, there are still moments where you feel like they are about to go into hero ball, but then all it takes is 2 or 3 set plays, a couple slashers, and then all of a sudden you have that open man in the corner, man. Like, I've never seen a team get so many wide open corner threes than this Celtics team does. It's every single night, there's at least 5 to 6 wide open corner threes happening, which is the best. You know, it's the most efficient 3-point shot out there. So, like, that's what we're looking at.
And then when you have the best corner 3-point shooter in the NBA, in Jrue Holiday, the man is shooting 63% from the corner. And think about this.
It's something.
He came in from last year in Milwaukee, and he was hitting 45% from corner threes last year in Milwaukee. So that's almost 20%. That's fucking insane. So just from playing with Giannis, once again, 45 is phenomenal. That is way above league average. But once again, the word I used earlier, exponential. There's nothing linear about this team right now. Porzingis.
Agreed.
Porzingis was not a linear move. Holiday was not a linear move. They have exponentially gotten better. And that's where Brad Stevens and Austin Ainge and Mike Zarin and Steve Pagliuca and Whit Grosbeck, they have strategically put this roster in place to say, It is now or never. And I love that they have that type of pressure. I hope that it goes into next year, even if they win it. Go into next year, fuck it. Go back to back if that's the case. Like, I want the dominance. I need that back. You know, I need injecting it into my veins. But yeah, that's just kind of how I see that. But yeah, I said, when you had that, like you said, when you had that going on, I said, all five guys are just lethal. And I want them all to start shooting the corner threes. Because even Jaylen Brown's getting better at that too. You know?
Well, it's like, if you remember, man, that's what made that Kawhi Raptors team so deadly. You know, that they, every person on the floor could drop 20 on any given night. Yes, Kawhi was the guy that made that thing move for sure, man. But you still had Van Vliet. You had Siakam. Like, you had these guys that on any given night could drop and give you 20, man. You know, and that's so important for a deep run into the playoffs. It's so, so, so important to have a guy when your best guys aren't giving you those 30 and 40 point nights, to have a guy like a Derek White or like a Porzingis or even like a Pritchard or a Hauser who can give you a quick 15 points, who can give you a solid, solid scoring night, man. And that's the shit that wins you NBA championships. Your stars, you know what I mean? The guys that will pick up the load. And that's what this team has. That's what we've been begging for. And that's what they got this year.
Yeah, because even I keep referring back to last year because that's just the sample size that we have. But, you know, you really can only trust Brogdon to have those moments off the bench last year.
Great.
And once again, he delivered plenty of times. So I don't want to make it seem like he didn't, because he did, which is why he won Sixth Man of the Year. But now, like I said, you have Pritchard, who's been consistent. You have Hauser, who's now been consistent. Cornette in limited minutes has been really good. Kata in limited minutes has been really good. So they've pushed the right buttons more this year. And like I said, it's evident in their play. It's evident in their confidence. And more importantly, it's evident in the execution. Like, they execute much better. Once again, Jaylen Brown said it best a few days ago. This is the most disciplined team I've been on. Yeah. And he's been there 8 years. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's really good when everyone's on the same page. You know, they've been to the conference finals. They've gotten all-star MVPs. They've been all NBA guys. It's now time to say, okay, the only thing that I need is an NBA championship. Yeah, or you know, plural, or ships. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's that. So, want to transition into the standings overall in the East. So, obviously, Celtics are 1, Cavs are 2, Bucks are 3, Knicks are 4, are 5, Pacers are 6, Miami is 7, Orlando's 8, Chicago's 9, and then to round out the play-in, Atlanta's at 10. They may dip out because of Trae Young's injury. He's going to be out for the next month or so that probably, you know, ends their season, presumably. So just out of those teams I named, you know, in the first or second round, like who would you want to avoid the most? And, you know, just who do you think we would match? I mean, we match up well against most, but just like who do you think would be the craziest matchup this year for us in the first round?
And I don't see any. Let's read them again. Read me the last few again. Sorry.
So from
what was six, seven, eight.
So 5 is the Pacers. I mean, Pacers. 5 is the Sixers. 6 is the Pacers. 7 is Miami. 8 is Orlando. 9 Chicago. 10 Atlanta.
I mean, I guess Indiana would be the toughest because they definitely have the best squad out of everyone. They have the most complete squad. Haliburton can win a game any night. If you give them the chance to, the addition of Siakam was pretty big for them. I really like that they have him to be able to score down low now with Miles Turner. I think that's pretty, they're pretty dynamic now, but I don't see them falling into that, you know, 8 seed in any way. Those 8, 9, 10, man, I don't see a team that can really get more than one against this team. I feel like if anyone does, it would be a disappointment. Obviously, the Heat. They're always going to be scary. Anytime I see Boston versus Miami Heat, I'm shaking in my boots a little bit. But this year feels different. I don't think that they can hang with us this year. I really don't.
Yeah, no, and I'll get my team in a minute, but you know me, I always got to connect history to what's going on. It's the teacher in me, right? I brought this up before, but this really feels like it now even more so than last year, or the year before, I should say. This feels like the Heat feel like our Detroit Pistons to our Bulls. And Detroit, I mean, Miami had the mental advantage against us. They were never more talented than Chicago, but they had the mental edge. They had the physical edge. And until Phil really caught his bearings, Chuck Daly had the coaching edge, right? Early on, anyway. Obviously, we know what Phil became. But early on, Chuck Daly was better than Doug Collins and the crew. Fine. But we get to that 91 series, and Miami or Detroit, Miami's beaten us twice. Detroit beat them twice. And all of a sudden, they got swept in the conference finals. Right? 91 conference finals. Chicago, Detroit walks off the floor in game four. And I feel like this is the first time where they finally know, oh, we're not better than them right now. We're not. And I think this is the first time, I think, last year they felt that way. They were, oh, we're better. Year before, even though they lost and we went to the finals, this is the first time they're looking at us like, yeah, we don't have the better team. We don't have the edge like we had before. And I think that's what's going on. And so, although I know they would have pushed us to six games, at least, I don't think they'd beat us in the first round. That was the case. Obviously, anything can happen. So I'm not sitting here thinking it'd be automatic because it's not. But actually, the team that I was thinking of is actually the team that's right behind them. But that's the Orlando Magic. I don't want to see them in the first round. A team that has nothing. They had nothing to lose. No one thought they were going to be there. And they had the size. Wendell Carter, 6'11". The Wagner brothers, both 6'10 or above. Ben Carroll's a problem. So Jonathan Isaac is a good wing defender. So I'm good. I'm good. Knowing our luck, Markel Fultz will have a revenge game. Oh, you guys picked Tatum over me? Like, I there's so many scenarios. I'm just like, nah, I'm cool. I'm actually good with facing Indiana only because I feel like because they're young and aggressive, I feel like we could use that aggression against them and probably beat them in five. Like you said, Halliburton's good to get you one, maybe even two because he's just super talented. But I feel like it would be pure domination. As good as Miles Turner is defensively, he's still 5 inches shorter than Porzingis. And like I said, he can bring take Porzingis out the paint. So that would be a different matchup. But I just think that we've played him so many times this year. We have to worry about Nesmith trying to fucking hurt somebody because I just think he's fucking dangerous out there. But other than that, but like I said, Orlando's the team for me. I'm like, I do not want to see them at all because I want as smooth as a first round series as possible. And then move on. Because even though they could beat Orlando in five, I feel like it'd be a physical five. And I'm like, I don't want that. So
I think that's a good call because, we're like you said, we're going to relate it back to history. That's what we do here on this basketball show, bro. And it would remind me of that Hawks team in 08 that we played in that first round. I feel you because.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. Because they're young. They're young. They don't know any better than to back down. And they got that youth to them, man, like that Hawks team did. So, yeah, I feel that, man. I feel that hard. I like that call. Well, I don't like that call, but I like that.
Yeah. Well, yes. Once again, I want to be proven wrong, but like I said, from what we've seen and what happens, I just want to make sure that it's the least resistance as possible. So, and then before we get into the week ahead and close this out, who do you think would be the biggest threat out west if we get to the finals?
Denver. It's got to be Denver. That Jokic and Jamal just create such a deadly dynamic duo, man, that it's already proven, what they can do and everything like that. So yeah, it's got to be Denver. I mean, I don't see anyone else. Maybe the Lakers because of LeBron, but even them, I think we can beat them. I really do. Even though they've already gotten us once this year,
Yeah. Well, no,
Denver's the one that scares
me. We beat them on Christmas Day. I mean, once again, I just for the optics, I mean, obviously Pierce got his one and only ring against the Lakers. I would love for that to be the case where we beat the Lakers for that. That would be great. But they have a lot of hurdles to jump to get over that. Low key, I think it'd be juicy if it'd be if it was Luka and Kyrie here in the finals. That would be fucking amazing. The storylines would be crazy for that one. But like I said, we don't have to worry about Dallas getting there either. So yeah, I mean, yeah, Denver for sure. This is an outside chance because of their health. But I would love to see us against Phoenix. I think that'd be a phenomenal series. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, agreed. There'd be so much star power in that series. I agree.
Yeah, so I think that would be awesome to see. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, like Denver for sure. Like I said, until someone knocks them off, you know, they're going to be, you know, the team to be in that regard. So let's close this out by getting into the week ahead. I'm purposely not talking about the 5-game road trip after the 3-game homestand because I feel that we'll be back next week and we can talk about it. We'll talk about it then. But they got Philly tomorrow night, like I said, as we record this on Monday night. They have Dallas on Friday night, and then they have Golden State here on Sunday. So just how do you see those games unfolding, and, you know, what do you want to see them work on during this homestand?
I don't see any reason why they wouldn't win all three, just based off of what we've seen. You know, obviously Golden State's always a struggle. It's a little bit of a rivalry game, so I think you toss the records out. I think you toss out they're struggling. They actually look a little better lately, too. They're playing with that swag again. And I don't know if you saw that pass by Curry behind the back where he wasn't even fucking...
Crazy.
That was
crazy. Crazy. Ridiculous.
And just like the confidence in that pass that he had, man. Like, he knew where that shit was going. And that's that swag from Golden State that you got to worry about. I think people out West do have to worry about them if they get that 7 or 8 seed, man. One of those top seeds could be in trouble early. But I don't see any reason why they shouldn't win all three games here. You know what I mean? And what I'm looking for, man, is the same thing they've been doing. I don't want them to change a goddamn thing. I want them to keep doing exactly what they've been doing because goddamn is it working. This team is firing on all cylinders, man. And one thing I do want to see is, or mostly what I want to see them keep up, I guess, is the defensive intensity, man. I think that was one thing that they lost last year a little bit of. And this year, they definitely seem to be ramping that back up. You know, you've seen a lot more like highlight reel blocks from this squad this year. You know, a lot of big defensive plays that create offense on the other side, which is exactly what got them rolling 2 years ago. Or I guess I said, 2 years ago. That's what I want. I want to see lots of defense in the offense. Not that they haven't been doing that. I want to see that.
Yeah, no, totally valid. Obviously, like, you know, we nitpick when a team is doing this well. So, yeah, defensive intensity is always going to be at the top because, you know, that has to be your identity as you enter any game, especially any series. But for me, it's on the offensive end. Like, every game, really, the rest of the year that Porzingis is in, I need him to get the ball the first 5 times every game down the court. Every time.
I like it.
First 5 times. Because that's what we used to do with KG. He would set the tone. Throws him in the post. He's getting fouled. He makes the right pass out of the post. Like, Porzingis can do all that, right? And he shoots better than KG. Just, you know, it's like, that's a different game, obviously. But, I mean, damn. They both were super efficient. Obviously, KG was efficient from the mid-range. You know, KP, I think, is shooting 52% himself from the field at almost 40 from three. So it's just like, you know, to me, get him the ball early and often, especially against Philly and Golden State, because they're both super small. Once again, you know, Embiid, unfortunately, is still out. They don't have an answer. They don't. And like I said, Philly's going to go small because they, you know, they got Buddy Hill now and, you know, Oubre's back and, you know, Tobias Harris and so on and so forth. But Maxey is the guy you got to worry about, obviously. But I'm giving him the ball, and especially against Golden State, they're not going to start Kevon Looney, and you got Kuminga down there. I'm sorry, it's barbecue chicken. Should be every time I give him the ball. You know, once again, obviously Draymond would be a better defender on him because Draymond's a smarter defender. If you're going to put Kuminga on him, Like, good night. Good night, Irene. So to me, that's what I want to see. Feed the post. That's the reason why you brought him over here. He leads the league in post-up efficiency. So let him get the ball the first five or six times down the court. Let JB continue to cook in the first quarter, and then Tatum take over in the second half. So that's where I'm at. I want to keep seeing that. And more, I want to see an aggressive Jrue Holiday going into the playoffs too, his last 20 games or so. I want to see him, because I feel like he sacrificed the most by far, you could tell, and he can easily get 20 a night. Easily. So this team is a lot more dangerous where he's getting 20. Like them games where they all had 15 or more, that's when it gets spooky. It gets real scary out here for the opponent. So I just want to see more on that, because I'm here for total domination. I don't want to win by 3. I want to win by 20. And once again, that's greedy.
Agreed.
I'm greedy, but that's just where I'm at as we go into, you know, like I said, this final stretch of the season. Like I said, we'll be back next week to, you know, discuss that 5-game road trip, which is their last major road trip of the season. So any last words on this before we wrap up?
Nah, man, just that it's good to be back talking seeds. You know, we'll definitely be back on here with you guys for the rest of this, you know, the stretch run. So definitely stick with us, guys, because we got a lot of Celtics to break down over the next few months. We're really going to get into it here over the next few months, for sure.
Yeah. And like I said at the beginning, just remember to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. You know, make sure, you know, you drop comments as this drops on YouTube. If you're listening on Spotify, so these are BK Bob Kelly. I'm Hollywood Brad Sean McCannon. Until next time, we'll see you. Peace.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast? Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Ravelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast. Transform your influence.
Electricast.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electricast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electricast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electricast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electricast.